From Altoona to Gettysburg, Erie to Breezewood, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, radical environmentalists are threatening to sue Pennsylvania energy companies, this under the guise of fighting climate change. At risk, thousands of jobs and your energy bills. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation for a Capital Watch discussion. And in Harrisburg these days, it seems everyone wants to legislate except for the legislature. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. State Representative Ryan Bizzaro, a Democrat from Erie County, has announced his candidacy for Pennsylvania State Treasurer. If he is successful in securing his party's nomination, he would face incumbent State Treasurer Stacey Garrity, who is seeking a second term as the Commonwealth's top fiscal officer. Curiously, Bizzaro focused on Donald Trump in his announcement speech rather than on any issue related to the office. This prompted a Garrity spokesperson to question whether Bizzaro knows what office he is running for. That election will take place in November of next year. The race for the Democratic nomination to take on incumbent Congressman Scott Perry in the 10th Congressional District, that includes much of the Capital Region, is getting more crowded. John Broadhurst, who bills himself as a businessman and an entrepreneur, announced his candidacy. He joins three other Democrats already competing in that primary, and a former television news anchor who lives in an adjoining congressional district is rumored to also be entering that race. Perry is chairman of the conservative House Freedom Caucus. He has faced competitive elections each cycle, races he has won by comfortable margins in a district that tilts Republican. The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is flush with cash. That's a good thing, right? Time to spend, 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 but not so fast. The Independent Fiscal Office issued a report that found the dramatic upswing in revenue, quote, isn't from a permanent shift in the economic standing of state government. Instead, it's a result of temporary pandemic-era federal largesse and historically high interest rates, end quote. The report indicated state spending could outpace revenue by the 2027-28 fiscal year. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Blaming energy companies for climate change, radical environmental groups are urging legislation to sue those companies to fund projects they believe will combat global warming. If they are successful, the impact will be higher energy bills for you, the consumer, the loss of thousands of jobs, and less dependable energy sources. Here to discuss the issue is our Capital Watch crew. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capital Watch All-Stars from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, President and CEO, Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, great to see you.
Happy to be here, David. Good to see you, too.
And as always, my main man, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation, Steve Bloom. Steve, great to see you.
Thank you, David. Great to see you as well.
So, and thanks as always to the listeners for tuning in, checking us out, and being part of the conversation today. And, you know, as you heard us talk last week about energy production, there are more issues related to that. As we said, energy is life, and that all the things that we need to do as individuals, as households, as businesses, all these things require energy. And so to have abundant, available, affordable, reliable energy is what makes modern life possible. And unfortunately, we've got a lot of stupidity on the march that is threatening, undermining, challenging those things.
And David, we think of energy in so many different capacities. And as you said, it is really the substance that allows us to live our lives the way we do in the United States of America, and people around the world are better off also because of utilizing the energy resources they have, or sometimes even having them exported or imported, depending on the situation. So we know that energy is critically important, but it's not just for lifestyle. It's for national security. And we've talked about this whenever the issue has come up in the past. It's a geopolitical issue. It's an issue that it's not just about dollars and cents. It's not just about convenience. It's not just about the price of gasoline. It's literally our ability to defend ourselves as a sovereign nation. And one of the ways we do that is by having established a strategic petroleum reserve. It was set up in the United States in 1975. And the idea was that we would put away in salt caverns and large storage areas literally the emergency crude oil we would need, the world's largest supply, to make sure that the world is a stable place if our adversaries around the world would try to cut off the supplies of oil and other energy sources that we utilize by importing to the United States.
Right.
So we would be strong and independent and able to defend ourselves for a prolonged period and really keep peace in the world by doing that. The petroleum reserve was established primarily to reduce the impact of disruptions on supply of petroleum products to carry out the obligations of the United States under the International Energy Program. So the idea is for situations of war or national emergency or acts of God, we would have the oil we need to carry on and restore ourselves.
Regardless of global conditions,
exactly.
We would have it here at home. And I think it's also important to note just briefly that, you know, when we think of energy, it's not just electricity. Electricity is extremely important, but there are also things about petroleum that we need beyond just as a fuel source, that we need petroleum and petroleum products for a very broad spectrum of uses as an input for manufacturing, as, you know, as a lubricant. Like, there are things that petroleum can do that nothing else can do.
Over the last – just the short term that he's essentially been in office so far, he has made the biggest drawdowns in history, and there hasn't been – a worldwide or national calamity that would call for it. He's been doing it to basically keep the prices lower at the pump for people for his own political good.
Even as he and his administration have waged war
on
the domestic production of energy, but at the same time that they have loosened the bonds on the dictatorship in Iran, that they've actually gone hat in hand to the dictatorship in Venezuela, that, you know, we'll lift sanctions on their evil and repressive regime if they expand oil production. Again, even as the Biden administration is working directly against energy production at
home. And again, for such a short period of time, it's, you know, it's not even full, not even through his first term yet, and he has already drawn down more from the national strategic petroleum reserve than all previous presidential administrations combined. The reserve itself has been drawn down by half. It used to be 700 million barrels. Now under Joe Biden, it's only 350 million barrels.
Which I think is the legal minimum.
And we are in a time of risk. We're not in a current period that we're going to need it. But certainly when you look at the international hostilities that are happening across the globe, in particular the war in Russia and Ukraine, there are situations where we could very soon need it.
Yes,
and we're only going to have half of what we're supposed to have, thanks to Joe Biden.
Yeah, and this to me is representative of the ongoing dysfunction that we have properly a margin of safety. So it's not that we have the absolute minimum we need to get by, but we've got a little bit of a buffer. Well, at every turn, you see this administration waging war against domestic energy production, making it more difficult to do those things, to keep the grid powered, to keep the reserves full, to keep production at a level that sustains consumer demand. And so, like, they're risking the stability of the grid. They're risking, as you say, our national security. I mean, Rebecca, I remember you talking about diesel fuel and the diesel additives that are needed for our trucks to work, and about how those supplies keep getting tighter and tighter.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, when we're talking about national security and economic security, we have to talk about diesel because, I mean, I think part of the reason for that strategic petroleum reserve is to make sure that our economy and our military and are able to continue continue to function should there be a national emergency. And diesel is critical to that because we know, you know, 97% of Class 8, the big trucks, run on diesel, and they carry 72% of American freight. So imagine not having diesel available. The country would shut down.
Yeah.
I mean, manufacturers wouldn't get raw materials. Grocery stores wouldn't get their products. Medicines wouldn't be shipped. You know, there's everything would come to a halt. But not only that, but 75% of farm equipment runs on diesel. And of course, our military needs diesel to function, which gets to the point of the national security. So this is a huge, huge issue. And I am really concerned about it. The trucking industry itself consumes 36 billion gallons of fuel a year. So when we're talking about the amount that has been depleted out of that reserve, it's really concerning because should we have a national emergency where we don't have access to some of the resources of oil, like you said, the war that's been waged on domestic production is a threat. But when you talk about, you know, cutting off our current access to our existing supplies, which is a real possibility should hostility break out in the world, it's a real concern. There's another thing I wanted to mention, and that is the crisis with refiners in the U.S.
Yes.
too. At the beginning of the pandemic, U.S. refiners had 19 million barrels per day of capacity.
Okay.
But by the end of 2022, it was less than 18 million barrels a day. So we lost 1.1 million barrels in less than 2 years. 9 refineries closed. And they haven't reopened. We had one in Pennsylvania here that closed.
Yes.
So, I mean, having the product, the supply of oil that we need to produce fuel is one thing. But if we also don't have the refineries to refine the product to be able to use it, that's a whole other problem, too, that we need to talk about as a country.
100%. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. We have these flights of fancy where our leaders are going to force us to purchase technologies that may or may not work, that may or may not be scalable, may or may not be affordable, and that we're going to abandon things that are tried and true, that have worked for decades, whether it's the internal combustion engine, whether it's the electrical grid and the stability of the grid. These folks just want to take a flyer on all that stuff and I guess kind of see what happens. Well, what could happen is the complete collapse of our civilization, because without – I mean, think about the winter storms or the really bad wind storms where the power goes out. And you're at home and you're stuck there for however many hours and the electricity is off. And, you know, and at that point, you know, you're careful not to open the fridge too many times because you don't want the food to get warm and spoil. And, you know, all the things that you can't do when the lights go out. Well, you know, imagine if that happens more and more, that it's not just a weather event. And again, the fact that the power goes out when you have a weather event is a real indictment of the integrity of the grid as it stands. So like when things are as tenuous as they are, like making it worse, taking even bigger risks is foolhardy in the extreme. And even the very cautious, very responsible people at the PJM Interconnection, which is the manager of the electric grid in the region that Pennsylvania is part of, that they have said, you know, we shouldn't let capacity go offline before we have new capacity come online. But that's where we are now.
And these are all symptoms of the same mindset that we were talking about earlier with the fact that, for example, President Biden, with no glaring national emergency happening, would think that this is a good time to just start dispersing this oil in the strategic reserve for political purposes, well, to gain popularity by keeping gas prices a little lower than they were not even refilling it. His energy department, President Biden's energy department, has said he intends to refill it, but it won't even be begun until his term is over in 2025.
Well, and that's
so
just,
it's
reckless.
It's a pie in the sky mindset.
Irresponsible. And this is at the same time that the administration has lifted permits that were already granted on the North Slope in Alaska, the same time that they, you know, killed off the Keystone XL pipeline to deliver more crude from Canada down to the US and stuff. So it's like, again, it's wildly irresponsible. And the attitude towards energy and the failure to appreciate the way that energy makes civilization possible. The latest gambit that we've seen is that you have the lawsuit industry that is going to come into Pennsylvania. This is their new, the new front in their war, that they're going to sue energy producers and manufacturers, blaming us for climate change. So to – and again, these are completely, completely baseless, foolish, preposterous lawsuits, but they're going to inflict more costs on the people who make things and the people who keep the lights on and the people who, you know, keep your the pumps full when you go to the Sheets or the Wawa or the Rutters or the Turkey Hill, and they're going to draw us into court to try to blame us for a global phenomenon for carbon dioxide emissions, which are 0.04% of the atmosphere, when at least in the United States and especially in Pennsylvania, we have seen our emissions go down. The air is cleaner now than it has ever been since we started measuring it in the modern era. We need to have a sea change. We need to have the broadest possible attitude adjustment where these sorts of ridiculous things just get laughed out of court the way that they should. But no, we're going to have to defend ourselves. We're going to have to spend time, energy, effort, money that'll be diverted away from, you know, satisfying customers, providing goods and services, adding value. Like, no, let's get tangled up in a foolish situation like this, under which none of the benefits of energy consumption will be recognized. Like, never mind the fact that manufacturing in Pennsylvania adds $100 billion worth of value every year, that it directly employs over 500,000 Pennsylvanians, that it pays the best wages and benefits in the marketplace, and that core manufacturing activity sustains millions of additional Pennsylvania jobs. They don't care. They don't care. They just want to ride their little hobby horse, and they don't care how much damage gets done. I also wanted to talk. Well, I know I'm ranting here, so guys, just give me one last thing to hit on. Our friends at Pittsburgh Works, Together out there in Allegheny County, that they issued a report where the air quality in Allegheny County is better than the air in San Diego, California, in Seattle, Washington, and in Austin, Texas. And those are places that people think are pretty nice. This hysteria and mania is really, it's completely unjustified. The air in Allegheny County is about average in the U.S. There is no crisis, and whatever, you know, problems we have, we'll work on remediating them. But it doesn't mean that we should like stop modern civilization.
Yeah, all our technology has become more efficient and certainly much cleaner over the last several decades. We've seen it from automobiles to standing factories and producers. Every realm with technology, the usage has become more efficient and there's less waste, which the pollution is simply the waste. Like when you burn natural gas, for example, and you don't – there's things in there that just don't burn because of the way the oxygen and the soap, other elements around that fire are making that fire weaker or stronger are occurring. But what we've learned is how to make it more efficient all
Correct.
The time. And
Correct.
So now there's very few byproducts. There isn't the smog that you used to see in the 1970s or even into the 1980s. That's all gone now.
Well, and Rebecca, give me your favorite stat. Tell us how much more efficient trucks are now.
Yeah. 60 trucks today have the same emissions as one truck in 1988.
So we're talking about that the emissions of one truck back then is the equivalent of the emissions of 60 trucks today.
Yeah,
that's the degree of improvement that we've experienced, and yet somehow for the climate cultists, that's not good enough.
What's the thank you and to try to shut you down?
Exactly. Yep. And I actually just happen to have it in front of me. Total emissions in Pennsylvania since 1990, total emissions are down 88%. That's an incredible success story. And this is what I wish we'd talk more about, because we're talking about banning fossil fuels or, you know, limiting fossil
fuels.
Which
is suicidally insane.
What we need to talk more about is how we're doing it right. and how other countries can take our example of how we're doing it right. Because China's building a lot of fossil fuel plants right now, a lot of coal plants right now. We can show other countries how you can do it right and cleanly. And we're just really shooting ourselves in the foot when we're trying to shut these things down, because we have a great way to set an example.
No, you're absolutely right that the U.S. leads the way, and that this should be part of our, you know, our international relations. And because people in poorer countries need energy. We're talking about people living in the kind of poverty where you don't have electricity, which means that you don't have refrigeration, which means that you're not able to keep things like food and medicines from spoiling. You don't have the power to pump the water out of wells, those kinds of things. So it's like for people to be able to have a roof over their heads, indoor plumbing, refrigeration, all those things require electricity. And so we need to continue. I know I'm ranting again, but this is something where we need to continue to remind people of what the stakes are, of the importance of these contributions to our well-being. And Rebecca, especially as you said, the tremendous environmental gains that we have made here in the U.S. and specifically made in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Over the last 30 years. So anyway, that brings us down to the end of our time. Thanks always to the listeners for being with us. And so, Steve, where do people go to learn more about you and your group and the things that you do?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org.
Excellent. And Rebecca, where do folks go to find out more about you and what you do?
They can find the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association at PMTA.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org. And from Steve, Rebecca, and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Our nation's founding fathers bequeathed us a governmental system with a delicate balance of power between three branches designed to keep any one from dominating public policy. Over the centuries, each branch has made untoward excursions into the other's territory, typically with adverse outcome. Here in Penn's Woods, our state constitution echoes the federal government, prescribing certain powers to the executive, legislative, and judicial branches. That has worked reasonably well, at least until the COVID-19 pandemic, when the lines of separation became blurred. Legislative powers appear to be the holy grail of governmental power. It seems everyone wants to legislate, except legislators. Let me be more precise. Except for the Democrats, who cling to the barest of majorities in the state House of Representatives. They have been more elusive than Waldo in recent months, only now returning to work after a nearly 3-month vacation. During that time frame, House Republicans have repeatedly called for a return to session. In the state Senate, both Republicans and Democrats have returned to session over the summer months to conduct the important task of completing the state budget. House Democrats were more likely to be found at the shore than in Harrisburg. While House Democrats were busy sunning themselves, Governor Josh Shapiro executed the latest raid on legislative powers. He announced last week his administration would begin implementing an automatic voter registration system in Pennsylvania. And he is doing that without legislative authorization, despite the fact election law is a power reserved for the legislature. Republicans in the legislature were quick to react. House Republican leader Brian Cutler staked a claim to the issue, saying, quote, "The problem here is not necessarily the end, but the means. The governor is following the sad and misguided precedent set by his predecessor that recognizes our election laws need updating and modernized, but then disenfranchises the General Assembly from exercising its constitutional prerogative to make laws," end quote. State Senator Chris Dush was even more direct, saying, quote, "Circumventing the legislature and the will of the people is a blatant act of defiance against our constitutional republic. It bypasses the checks and balances that are in place to safeguard the interest of all citizens," end quote. Even former President Donald Trump weighed in, calling Shapiro's action a, quote, "disaster" by a, quote, "radical left governor," and urging lawmakers to take legal action to block the change. The Pennsylvania House Freedom Caucus plans to do just that, and took the further step of questioning the security of automatic voter registration. State Representative Don Kiefer spoke for the Freedom Caucus, saying, quote, Shapiro's eagerness to pick up former Governor Tom Wolf's mantle of running roughshod over legislative powers is disappointing. The citizens of Pennsylvania need to know what guardrails have been put in place to ensure that ineligible voters, such as convicted felons, underage persons, and non-citizens, will be prohibited from inclusion in the process, end quote. Kiefer's reference to former Governor Tom Wolf harkened back to his repeated trampling of legislative powers during the COVID-19 pandemic. Those powers were only curbed when voters took the historic and unprecedented action of amending the state constitution to bring his draconian policies to an end and restore basic freedoms to state residents. Unfortunately, governors are not the only ones to infringe on legislative powers. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court has a long history of legislating from the bench, and that proclivity has been especially prevalent in the arena of election law. The justices placed their thumbs, actually their entire fist, on the scales during the 2020 election, repeatedly issuing election-related rulings that rewrote provisions of state election laws. The High Court's trampling of legislative powers reached a crescendo when it appropriated unto itself the power to redraw congressional district lines, clearly a legislative power, and implement by judicial fiat a congressional district map drawn by a left-wing college professor from California. Election meddling by the Supreme Court and inconsistent application of the rules by the Wolf administration resulted in the destruction of confidence in our state's electoral process. To this day, a significant portion of the electorate questions the validity of the 2020 presidential election, largely because of the controversial law and rule changes. To paraphrase Ronald Reagan, there they go again, with what is shaping up to be yet another hotly contested presidential election, with Pennsylvania being a key battleground state, Governor Josh Shapiro is attempting to once again rewrite election law in a manner he perceives to be to his party's advantage. Not only is this a blatant violation of the separation of powers, but it will once again instill in the electorate the sense that our electoral process is lacking in fairness and integrity. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 28 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WRDV-FM in Warminster, WFRJ-FM in Windber, along with WRAK-AM in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.